The running joke on the Daily Connect between Stephen and myself is that whenever a health and fitness story appears in our inbox, or when a sports story is hitting the headlines, Stephen will usually pass it over to me. Now that's probably because he's more of a Netflix and snooze kind of a guy, but partly because he knows that I come from a sporty background. But the one event that's beyond me, however, is running a marathon. Now that takes superhuman levels of fitness and dedication to conquer. And one of the most famous distance races of them all will be taking place this coming Sunday, the London Marathon. Now, there will be runners from Team RNIB taking part, as well as others who are there fundraising for the charity as well. One of those is Sandeep Taylor, who has taken a break from his running preparation to join me on the phone now. Thank you very much for joining me, Sandeep.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I wanted to start by talking about your preparation ahead of Sunday's race. And I've seen on your fundraising page that you also took part in the Manchester Marathon. So how did that go?
Yeah, so I ran the Manchester Marathon on Sunday, 7th of April, so just a couple of weeks back. And that went really well. It wasn't too hot or too cold. It was kind of mild day, perfect for running. And I ran it in 3 hours, 51 minutes. I did aim for about the 3 hour 40 mark, but I think by about mile 16, 17, I was feeling extremely tired. I started to slow down a bit, but it wasn't nothing major. It was obviously a great feeling to cross the line at the end.
No, if I was running that, I think I would need another 12 months to sit off and relax. But you're thinking as you're running this, I've got another one in a couple of weeks' time. I've got the London Marathon.
Yeah, so I mean, I like to test myself repeatedly at something. So now that I've done the Manchester Marathon very close to the London Marathon, what it's done for me is it's given me an idea of how my body's going to respond or how my body has coped with the training so far and what kind of pace I can run at. It also gives me a chance to kind of run through the way in which I'm going to run, so the kind of the gels that I'm going to eat along the route, for example, right? Just to give that a final check. I also think that just running the distance just gives you a kind of psychological boost that you know you can do it. And so, you know, you're kind of relaxed on the day. You've been there before and know that you can make it to the end.
Is it a runner's myth about the second wind kicking in, you know, around mile 17, 18, you suddenly get a burst of energy and you feel revitalized? Or is that just a runner's myth?
It could happen for some runners. What I tend to find is that around the mile 15, 16, 17 mark, I tend to get really tired. It doesn't matter how much I eat or how much I hydrate myself. I get very tired. I'm not sure it's kind of a nutritional problem or a training problem, but it always happens. But what's interesting is that by about mile 23, with about kind of 3 miles, 5Ks to go, I seem to find myself again and get a burst in the last few months.
What made you decide to fundraise for the RNIB for these two marathons?
I mean, I've been involved in distance running for a number of years now, and I had this eye condition, and I hadn't fundraised for about 6 or 7 years, and you know, I think my wife just said to me, look, you know, you've got an eye condition, you run a lot. You like running, why don't you fundraise this time? Use that as an opportunity to just kind of raise some money for a good cause. And so I think I put in application for the RNIB, and thankfully I got a place.
Now, you have an eye condition yourself. Mm. Is this something that is in the back of your mind as well when you're raising money for the RNIB, that you know how difficult it is for people who want to be long-distance runners and marathon runners, that maybe sitting at home thinking, I wish I could take part, but it's just not going to be for me because I won't be able to do it?
Yeah, that's great. So I think just participating in any kind of sport can be difficult for somebody that's partially sighted or has complete sight loss. And so I think, you know, it's a way of kind of maybe just encouraging people to get out there and try and make things happen. You will face challenges along the way about how you're going to train and how you're going to get through things. But I think that, you know, you can try and break it down and manage it bit by bit. And in the end, you'll feel good for getting across the line, really. So, you know, I would encourage anyone who's who's got any kind of sight loss to try and get out there and do things, whatever your interest is.
So you told me when you were a teenager, you lost your central vision. How did that affect? Were you a runner before then, or was running something you took up after you had lost your central vision?
Yeah, so that's an interesting story. So actually, when I was a teenager, I loved to play the game of cricket, and so I played cricket for my school. I loved the game. Whenever there was good weather or the summer came, I always took the opportunity to play the sport. But what happened was, because I lost my central vision, I could no longer see a cricket ball in the distance. And so I could not, for example, field or catch properly. And so ultimately what it led to was I had to give up playing the sport, which was actually quite, looking back, it was quite of a sad time, really, because I did, even to this day, I watch cricket. I go to watch England play in various test matches, but, I don't actually play the sport. So I gave up the sport for a while. And I think as I got into my 20s, I started to realize that, I should participate in some sport, and probably a sport that makes it a little bit easier for me. And so, okay, I didn't have full vision, but I could do things like running, for example, mm-hmm. And as a way of getting fit, because I'd also sort of become unfit by the time of my late 20s. I'm 34 now, going on 35 this year. I took up distance running, and then back in 2012, I ran my first ever marathon, and kind of never looked back, really. And I've done lots of distance running events since then.
But you've never considered running with a guide runner? You're fully capable of doing it without it, or having someone there to support, to time keep or just keep your pace or anything along those lines?
No, so I think that my condition isn't so severe that I need a guide dog, for example. Mm-hmm. What tends to happen is, I look out my peripheral vision. So where that's useful is, for example, mile markers. So as from a distance, I can't read a mile marker if it says, for example, 4 miles. But the closer I get, I can sort of see out my peripheral vision that it's going to be 4 miles, for example.
Okay.
And then any runners around me, I can sort of make out them. So it's not really a problem that I need someone around all the time.
Relying on the runners beside you not being practical jokers when you're approaching mile 20 and they say, no, you're only at mile 10 at the minute. You're lying, hoping that they'll be honest enough to tell you where about things are.
I've had moments like that where I've sort of missed the mark or not been able to read it. And I've asked somebody, how long to go? And they said, oh, we only got like 10 miles to go. So I'm just kidding, five miles to go. So I have had a few instances like that.
Have you ever thought about being a guide runner yourself then? Is it something that maybe you've looked into?
Yeah, it's something that I'm open to. So I think this fundraising activity that I'm doing is the first time. I think, so if we take a step back, I'm somebody that only sort of begins to open up about my condition, right? So the way in which I've dealt with all this in the past is to kind of just brush it to one side and get on with it. And in one aspect, that's good. Because you sort of have a can-do attitude. On the other side, you're kind of bottling it up, and that might not be so healthy. So what I'm now doing is I'm trying to participate more and help more with organizations like RNIB. And so, to your question, would I be open to being a guide runner? Absolutely. So, I think that I've run quite a number of marathons and half marathons, and so I feel totally comfortable maybe helping somebody who has a complete sight loss or has worse vision than me, getting through these distance running events. So it's something I'm open to.
It's been in the news as well the last couple of months, especially leading up to the London Marathon, about guide runners that are taking part in the event alongside people who are blind or partially sighted, because in all previous races, they haven't qualified for a medal. They haven't qualified for getting a timing chip at all, so they can't track their races. They weren't even included in the official results. And this was brought up earlier this year, and it appears now that the organisers have changed their tone, and they will be now putting people who are guide runners on the official list. We'll be giving them medals and T-shirts, and we'll be giving timing chips so they can take part that way as well. That's a fantastic step forward, isn't it? It's huge that they've been able to recognise that the guide runners are runners themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a surprise, actually, that it's probably taken this long to get those changes across, really, because at the end of the day, they participate in the event. They run the course. They're helping others to do that. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they've run the marathon, and so they should get a medal and a time.
Now, we mentioned briefly that just taking that first step into something new when you're blind or partially sighted can be a very difficult hurdle for people to overcome. So if there's someone out there now who does have a visual impairment but is really keen on maybe signing up for the London Marathon next year, do you have any advice on maybe how they would start from a running perspective? What would your tips be for someone who's planning next year to run their first marathon?
Yeah, so I think I would start running smaller events soon. So I think that the challenge, I think, this is something that's been the challenge I faced, was that I didn't participate in sport. And then I woke up one day and thought, okay, I'm going to run a marathon. And I think the lessons I learned along the way was, you know, I jumped into that very quickly, and perhaps, you know, got injured when I could have avoided it, for example, by running too much too quickly. And so you have to kind of show some humility and understand that it takes time for your body to adjust. And if you're thinking about running the London Marathon, say in 2020, I'd definitely go for it. But what I would start to do is look at that well in advance. So look almost now, really, right? So start going out for jogs, regular jogs, 3-4 times a week. What you can do is participate in your park run. So every Saturday, there is a free park run, probably in your local area. You can Google it. There are park runs all over the United Kingdom, and they're held at 9 o'clock every Saturday, and they're completely free. And so you can start to participate in those. And then from that, your confidence will start to build, and you'll start to think about, you know, running 10 kilometers or half marathon. And then, you know, your body's going to adjust, and then you're going to be kind of well positioned to look at the sort of London Marathon with sort of 20 weeks to go. That would be my advice. I would also say that to get help from others. So another thing that probably I should have done better was I just went out running all the time, and I didn't really immerse myself in a community of runners, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can avoid mistakes by quickly learning from seasoned people. And so, you know, if you're partially sighted or have sight loss, you know, get in touch with RNIB runners and get their experiences of how they did things. You know, look at your local club. They'll probably, you know, in my case, I have a local club that go running on Tuesdays. So, you know, just try to get the wealth of information from people around you.
Now, you're going to be one of 40,000 runners who will be taking part on Sunday in the race. Now, a lot of those people will be fundraising for charities, and a lot of those people will have decided, maybe after one or two drinks, have decided that this year I'm going to run in fancy dress. So the question that I like to ask people when I'm interviewing them who are doing the London Marathon is, what is the funniest dress that you've seen other people dressed up in as you've run past them? Or have you seen them, or they've run past you maybe? What has really stood out for you as someone who's, what are they doing wearing that?
Yeah, so there's two things that stuck out. So I remember a few years ago, I ran the Milton Keynes Marathon. It must have been approaching 30 degrees. And I remember a couple of people. One person was dressed in a kind of full bear outfit, so a big black bear from head to toe.
Oh my!
And it had an enormous amount of I presume artificial hair or fur.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, I was running by with my shorts and t-shirt, and I was thinking, I'm hot, and I'm throwing water all over myself. I couldn't imagine what was going on underneath that suit.
So
kudos to that person for making it over the line. That was one thing that made me chuckle. Another one was, I remember a guy dressed in army uniform carrying a real life-size freezer on his back. Yeah, so I've seen this as well. So they somehow roped it up to some kind of bag, and they put the bag on, and then they're literally, I would say, just fast walking you know, down the road with a fridge on their back, which is also quite funny.
That's incredible. But no fancy dress for you this year then, no?
No, I think that's too much. Marathons are hard enough, and I don't want to complicate it with.
Yeah, that's my line of thinking. Yeah, it's hard enough doing all the training, all the preparation. You suddenly got to sit down and think, do I want to dress up as Hansel and Gretel? Do I want to dress up as a big giant bear? I cannot get my head around why someone would want to run in 30 degree heat. Luckily, though, for this coming weekend, the weather's looking good. It's predicted around about 18 degrees for you in London. There will be a lot of cloud overhead. Now, I'm guessing that's ideal for a runner. Maybe you want a little bit of rain at some point of the race just to cool you down. But 18 degrees is more than ideal, isn't it?
Yeah. I think if you're sort of below, if you're around the zero sleety, icy, snowy mark, then I think that creates problems. And I think, you know, if you're going above 20, 25 degrees, then that creates the problem on the other side of the spectrum. I think if you could stay in between, keep it approximately dry, I think that's fine, really. And the occasional get you through. It's a tricky one because all these runners, we spend all our time running through the winter months, and where it's majority of the time it's pretty cold.
Yeah.
And then the marathon season comes sort of April, May, and it can easily get much hotter. So, you know, to an extent, your body's not kind of used to that. But hopefully it'll be okay.
Yeah, the unpredictable British weather means it could be 30 degrees or it could be snowing. You don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have a Just Giving page up. We'll make sure to share that out on our social media. We'll put it up in the link for the podcast as well. You're a little over halfway, so we're hoping to get you up to that 2,000 mark that you've set. That would be fantastic to get that. So all I can do at this stage is wish you the very best of luck, Sandeep. I hope everything goes well, and maybe we'll even speak to you after the race to see how it went.
Oh, no, thank you very much for having me.
Now, Sandeep is just one of an amazing team of over 100 runners taking part this weekend in support of the RNIB. Altogether, it looks like they are going to raise an incredible £230,000. What a figure that is. That's incredible. If you fancy going along to the race and cheering on Team RNIB, we would recommend that you do so, especially if you live close to the London area and it's a nice day. It's a great feeling being there and cheering races on. But if you want to cheer Team RNIB on specifically, you can do, because there are two dedicated cheer points where you can go along. One of the RNIB team members will be there to give you a t-shirt. You could shake a pom-pom or a rattle just to support Team RNIB on. There are two dedicated locations. One is on mile 13, which is the highway and the Tower Hill section of the race. And the other one is just before the finish line on mile 25 along Embankment. There's more information about those two dedicated cheer points on the RNIB website. We would recommend you go there to find out more information. If you're unable to be there like me, if you live just that little bit too far away, you can find out more information on social media as well by using the hashtag Team RNIB, or you can follow all of the action live on the BBC.